Paperman meets such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery.
Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis where some veteran journalists from New York's capital region give you some insight into newsroom decision making and some of the ethical challenges that are faced by all journalists around the country these days. I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now publishing The Upstate American on Substack, and I am here with two of my colleagues, Judy Patrick, the former editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady, and Barbara Lombardo, who was executive editor of the Saratogian and The Record in Troy. Judy, how are you doing? What's in your mind?
Oh, man, there was a watershed moment this week when FBI agents go into the home of a Washington Post reporter and seize her computers and her Garmin watch as well. I'm livid about this. This needs to be addressed. This is wrong.
We will definitely have to talk about that. Barbara Lombardo, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking about being suckered in as a member of the media when the president offers a quote-unquote rare opportunity to interview, and it's really nothing but BS.
Can we say that?
Well, I think you can say BS.
Let me say this. Although I did not listen to it, I've got a lot of opinions about it.
Well, I've read the transcript, and I'm sure your opinions will be valuable. I just want to take a moment at the top, before we get to the important topic that Judy brought up, to just vent my rage at Fox News, which, you know, we talk about often here. But I just want to point out that the effort to continue to peddle radical and false narratives to its huge audience just continues. It is very frustrating to see a news source that a lot of Americans trust, tragically, doing all they can to support masked ICE officers as if they can do no wrong. And they're putting, you know, it's called Chyron. That's actually a brand name, but it's like Kleenex. It's been used so much that it's now used. Chyron is the little font along the bottom of the screen. So look at these on-screen Chyrons, the banners during primetime coverage of what was going on in Minneapolis. Dems fuel the insurgency. The Dems murder-suicide machine. Dems destroy everything they touch. Dems want to take America down with them. Radicals declare war on ICE. So that is going on. And meanwhile, they are ignoring the fact that, you know, six U.S. prosecutors resigned in Minnesota, reportedly as a result of the pressure to investigate the wife of the late Renee Good. That was not mentioned on Fox News, except for one little in passing on Brett Baer's show. So literally, Fox News intentionally doesn't cover important news, intentionally distorts the news that it does cover.
That seems more brazen than it has been in the past. Do you think it has ramped up what they're doing?
Maybe it's just that we don't watch it as much as we should to pay attention to it. I read transcripts of Fox News often because I just can't tolerate having to watch it in real time. But it is something that I always tell young journalists, don't work for Fox News, folks. You don't have to do that kind of thing to get your career ahead. Your integrity matters more than that. And it is not the same as any other outfit. There is not a reputable news organization, and it has such a huge audience that you have to consider it part of the mainstream media. There is none that does intentionally bias its reporting that way. So thank you for tolerating this rant, folks. And now, Judy Patrick, on to what went on in D.C.
What happened was, armed with a legal subpoena issued by a court, perfectly legal for them to do this, the FBI agents went into a Washington Post reporter's house in the early morning hours, took two computers and a Garmin watch as part of an investigation that they tried to reassure us that wasn't targeted at the reporter, but at someone who worked for the federal government who has been charged with leaking classified information or taking classified information out of safe hands. Now, My first question is, where's Jeff Bezos, the owner of the Washington Post? Why isn't he out there expressing outrage? He's not. The editorial page did, but they're saying, you know, don't worry, we're going to continue our good work. Well, I am worried because every source who connects with a reporter is now worried that the reporter is going to be unable to safeguard or protect their confidentiality. I mean, this is a huge assault on our ability to do our job. This is not something the federal government typically has done. This is something we fight against. We are not able to do our job as a press if we cannot work with confidential sources and if we are under threat of having our homes invaded by federal agents. What happened was Pam Bondi has reversed a longstanding Department of Justice through the Biden administration that called for this very thing not to happen. And this is just the first in what I imagine will be a long string of federal agents invading reporters' homes.
I share your concerns. We have to be careful as members of the media and supporters of the media to not make it sound as if there would never be a reason to go into a reporter's home to take information as part of an investigation. There could be times when, and this isn't one of them, though, where this could be justified, but this should be a last-ditch effort after you've tried to get the information and to actually have a bar that needs to be higher of how you justify getting the warrants. From what I had read about this case was that they hadn't talked to this reporter before. They just went in and wham. It's not like they tried to get information. Not that they should be getting information from a reporter in the first place, but they just jumped right to excess.
Here's what is also concerning is that while this is supposedly in pursuit of information about this particular supposed leaker inside the Pentagon, the reporter had information, had equipment that she used to communicate with, say, 1,200 different sources inside the government. She had actually sought information because her beat was to cover the deterioration of federal services, let's say, under the Trump administration. So I think that what is difficult here is that you can't necessarily assume goodwill on the part of the federal government. You can't say, well, yes, they were going after this leaker, and here is how they could justify their case against him. You might think that it is actually, in fact, a fishing expedition with the reporter and that the pursuit of the leaker was pretense to go after the Washington
Post. Right, because they were sweeping up everything she had.
Right, because she wrote a first-person story a week or two ago about how she was basically the whisperer for federal employees who wanted to talk about the impacts of the DOGE cutbacks were having on their department. This reporter does not write about national security. She writes stories about the impact of all those cuts and how they're affecting the operation of government. So yeah, that is a good point. All those people who reached out to her, I'm sure, are worried now because the government's effort to clamp down on any kind of leaks or any kind of dissension or any kind of protest has really ramped up and taken this new turn. Yeah, it's
It's going to be a huge chilling effect on people willing to relay the information to the press and also even reporters to be able to ask, where do you store this information to keep it out of the hands of the government?
There are ways to do it. And I've previously expressed my admiration here on this program for Brendan Lyons, the managing editor for Investigations of the Times Union, because of his capacity, the way that he relates to sources. You know, he has ways of getting around people. He tells them not to use their telephones, not to call his office and so on. And if you are a Washington Post reporter now, you need to be very careful with what you do and use different devices, different means of communication, even Signal, the encrypted message platform, is not necessarily secure. And the other thing that is important to consider here, I think, is what we are seeing in the midst of the crackdown that's going on with ICE forces and other federal troops across the country. I can't believe we're using this phrasing about America, but the federal troops in our cities, is that reporters are being given guidance by the organizations that have traditionally been formed to protect journalists elsewhere in the world. They're now being told here in America, you know, there are certain practices that you need to follow. Always tell someone where you're going. Carry goggles, face masks, water, first aid kits. I mean, there is now danger for reporters going out on the street.
Keep your contact information written in ink on your arm.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I mean, this is the latest in a long stream of efforts to intimidate the press. I mean, they threw all the standard Pentagon reporters out of the Pentagon because they refused to sign some pledge that all the stories would need pre-approval from the administration. They have sued the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, They have taken the funding away from public radio and public television. They have threatened, the licenses of radio stations.
Well, one of the interesting things is that as of the middle of last month, the U.S. Press Freedom Tracker found that there have been at least 32 instances where journalists have been detained or arrested across the country while they're reporting on immigration actions. So you really need to consider 32 American journalists detained. This is a different situation than what we have historically had in this country.
And it needs to be taught in newsrooms of all sizes in all cities. So clearly in the bigger cities where these ICE people are out there regularly, but ICE is in the communities in small towns everywhere, including in our region. And do reporters who are going to cover that, are they prepared to deal with it if something does escalate?
I think not. I think in the small towns where especially you have a lot of younger, less experienced reporters, nobody really expects that kind of a reaction, right?
And there's been reporting this week that government officials are using new technology to surveil, to figure out, what reporters are in the area, what protesters are in the area. There's a reason they're taking pictures of people's license plates, because they are doing more than just encountering them on the street. They're going back to the office and they're doing more things. And so we really need to be mindful of this. And bigger newspapers do have the resources to know how to protect their sources. But again, the person in the one or two person shop is going to have less access and be less able to help. I mean, there aren't that many phone booths to go to anymore to make the phone calls that we used to have. There are burner phones, and I think you'll see a lot more use of that. But our industry needs to catch up to what's happening.
What about the difficulty for reporters covering demonstrations and so on when you consider the context of the shooting of Renee Good? The question that rises is what people take from that video, for example, what they believe they saw. We've all seen the same video from Minneapolis, but the fact is people are seeing different things. Now, a majority of people, according to polls, believe that the ICE agent did the wrong thing, that it was an unjustified shooting. But still, there is a sizable minority, perhaps 30% of the people, who watch that same video and say, she intended to run over him and he reacted in self-defense. This, I think, puts the spotlight on a reality of journalism, which is that in trying to present facts to people and giving people a true account of what went on, you run into the difficulty of static in the reception, the interference of people's prejudices into accepting even your best efforts at truth-telling. It's a challenge that always confronts journalism, right?
Yeah, I've seen some really good analysis, again, by papers with more resources to do this kind of thing, breaking down the video in a way that's convincing and offers a level of credibility to what happened. I mean, thank goodness for the videos. But again, there's so much out there on the web that I find myself spending a lot of time trying to figure out what's real and what's not.
Right. And some of it is not interpreting what's in there and coming to your own conclusion. It's believing what you want to believe instead of your own eyes. And perfect example of that incident is when the president is saying that the officer was run over. He's lucky to be alive. And people believe that.
Which the video clearly shows is not true, but then
he had internal bleeding was the latest thing that maybe came out. And we certainly don't condone anybody being hurt in the process of protesting. We don't want anybody killed, for sure.
I think you raise an important point, though, also, Judy, when you mentioned what is not real that is being generated. And I think we're seeing increasingly the peril of this, even in our own community, because there seems to be what, by our judgment here, might be an AI-generated so-called slop website that is stealing information and marketing it to people, perhaps not written by real people. Can you explain that?
We're starting to see these sites crop up around the nation, and it posts pictures of people that you would think would be real people with real names. But
they're correspondents, supposedly.
Correspondents, but it looks like it's stories that have been taken from legitimate news sources. And so I guess our request to our listeners is, if you see a site that doesn't look like it's a mainstream site, to let us know, because we're trying to get a handle on what is out there that's just AI generated or just run through an AI filter and is taking content from people who actually generate it, who may have a copyright to it, and reposting it. I mean, you can, as we all know, you can take a piece of what a news organization produces and reuse it. But
that's called fair use under the copyright laws, and that's fine. But you can't swipe the whole damn thing and put it off as your own.
Or you're swiping it and then having AI rewrite it so that you now have a new story.
Or mislead people into thinking you have local reporters, real human beings out in the street, when you may not, and in fact, have that.
There is a media research firm called NewsGuard, and NewsGuard has identified more than 2,000 news sites that are AI-generated in the country as of October. And the reason these things exist is because they carry advertising, of course. It's like the reason potatoes exist. It's to deliver butter. I'm just kidding. I'm kind of fixated on baked potatoes lately. Anyway, no, the reason that these places exist is not really to give people news. It's to give people advertising. I'm actually holding back from mentioning the name of one that is seemingly operating in this community because I don't want to give the guy the revenue that he might be generating by swiping this.
And we need to dig a little bit deeper to make sure that this is something illegitimate before we claim
it to be
so.
We wouldn't want to be unfair.
Or sued.
Yeah. But it is quite amazing because we've seen this happen all over the country where legitimate names of news organizations are being swiped. Content generated by legitimate news organizations is being repurposed, seemingly by AI. And people just have to be very cautious to be sure they're getting real information. And the owners, the reporters, have a right to be able to say, no, we should be the ones generating this content and taking both the blame for it and getting the revenue for it.
Yeah, and I think you tried to clarify that it's different than some business people who take news stories from the community and they create links on their
an aggregation site.
Right, it's an aggregation site.
Yeah.
And there are some that are, you know, like them or not, they exist, they're legal. And they, when you click on the link, it connects you to the story as it's posted on the original site.
So but they're not swiping it.
It's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to AI, because what it's doing is sucking in all the original content, be it a novel, a musical recording. And I thought local news might have been safe because it's harder to access, but that's not the case.
All right. We want to turn to another topic because, Barbara, you were really quite intent on talking about, I believe you were probably talking about Tony DeCoppel, the new CBS News anchor.
Well, not just about Tony DeCoppel, but his bosses at CBS News, that they are pretending that they took advantage of an opportunity to interview the president and really was just, well, let me put it this way. I didn't listen to it, but I read a lot about it. And felt good to know that I didn't think I'd miss anything, and I sure enough didn't miss anything. I think the media, when you're invited to interview the president of the United States, like, which of us would turn down that quote unquote opportunity? Maybe you're supposed to say no, or you're supposed to have ground rules saying, well, yeah, but we're going to ask follow-up questions. This isn't going to be a 15-minute ad or 15-minute filibuster. That it's going to, if it's a real interview, then you need a real interview. That's not what happened. They need to watch, you know, Chris Wallace and Jonathan Swan of Axios at the time both provided good examples of how a real interview is supposed to be taken.
Yeah, and this ended up being sort of much ado about nothing. CBS News basically got the benefit of saying, well, we got an interview with the president and produced no decent journalism out of it. But that's what happens, of course, when a person is elevated into a position based upon a political consideration. I don't know that there has ever been a media executive in a mainstream media organization who got the leadership post in that organization based upon their political affiliation, which seems to be what happened with Barry Weiss getting named the editor-in-chief of CBS News.
Yeah, but I think that, to coin a word that my brother made up when he was a kid, insuckerated, I think the media get insuckerated into thinking that they're doing something special, that this is an honor. And even in Tom Jones, who's somebody I admire as a writer for the Poynter Institute, a journalism think tank and training facility, and even in his apologetic notes about this interview, he did call it a rare opportunity to interview Trump, that DeCoppel had no choice but to use his mere 15 minutes to get through as many topics as he could. You have to make tough calls about how much to push back on.
True.
Well, I don't think that's true. I think you know all that going in, so it's a lot of baloney.
Right. I think CBS News is veering into the non-serious journalism world where they're trying to create a viral moment. They're trying to do less serious journalism and more I mean, even their website, they have free press articles on there now, which is Barry Weiss's, the website she originally created, that is part of the major company that owns CBS now. So what you're seeing is more right-wing information on that website. And again, we all want to do those light stories. I mean, CBS used to do the On the Road series with Charles Grell, but that's different than what is happening now with interviews
right.
like
the
with
time
Trump.
And effort would have been better spent and would still be better spent on telling the public about what Trump and the administration are doing, as opposed to just giving him free rein to babble.
Now, let's move to a topic that is actually relevant to the new emerging media landscape. And it has to do with Zoran Mamdani, the mayor of New York, who shortly after his inauguration had a new media press conference, it was stated. And what is interesting about this is that this was an event for not traditional reporters, but for influencers and content creators. And it is a really interesting dilemma to think of a politician trying to reach out to the new modes of communicating with people to be sure that, as we believe, politicians and journalists alike ought to be reaching consumers, news consumers, where they are. But if you're excluding real journalists in pursuit of the new media, how are you any different from what Pete Hegseth is doing at the Pentagon, right? And one of the interesting things is that among those who were excluded was a reporter for Epicenter New York City, which is one of the small multi-platform community. We had the founder of that on this program a few months ago, Mitra Kalita, who is from Queens, New York now. These are a bunch of smaller, specialized sites, but they're genuine journalism, and they're being excluded from
this
kind of
thing. Yeah, I thought of her, and I remembered that visit from a few months ago. Thought of her when I read the story, because if she's not new journalism, if she's not community journalism, then who is?
Hey, the good news here is there are a lot of media outlets, or whatever we defined as media outlets, interested in what's happening in New York City. But it's an age-old problem. I'm sure maybe they had the same issue when the newspaper reporters maybe complained back in the day when the radio reporters started to show up. But, I mean, who defines who's a reporter, a legitimate reporter, and who's not? I mean, I think you need to always err on the side of being as open as possible. And especially in this day of technology, hey, have somebody in another room and just pipe the information in. The idea that he purposely excluded people is what is concerning to me.
Well, they did actually, in this case, Mayor Mamdani did allow them to watch a live stream of the event, but they weren't allowed to get in to ask questions. And I think that there's an interesting challenge. Yes, I think you're right. It is often the case here in the state capitol, we find that access is limited to reporters who are credentialed to the Legislative Correspondents Association often to get to some of the state top state leaders. But that's in part just to manage the numbers. But by gosh, if you're claiming to do journalism, claiming to be reaching out to journalists, you need to get to the whole gang of them. Finally, one thing that I just want to make note of here, which is kind of interesting in the context of how the media is changing, that is the number of TV stations around the country who are dropping their network affiliation, right, so that they can just do local news full time and save the money that they would pay the networks. That could be a good thing, couldn't it? If you actually have more time on your schedule to do local news programming.
Well, if you're then taking the money you used to pay to the network and instead investing in local reporting on your staff, maybe that would work. I mean, we've already established through other surveys that people are not getting their news. They're not watching TV for their news. So this would have to change habits. And I guess the hope is that if it's local, maybe it would be different.
Yeah, color me skeptical on this one. They probably viewed this as a way to save some money. Maybe there will be some more local news, but the viewership on local TV news is going down, and it's going the way of print newspapers.
Sadly, but that is true. Online is now the principal way that Americans get news. It's ahead of TV news as of last year. Part of the changing landscape of the media that we talk about here all the time in the Media Project, and that brings us to the end of another program. We'll get back to these topics again next week, and we hope you'll join us. Barbara Lombardo, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. Our producer is David Gustina. And we thank you for joining us. Hope to see you again next week on The Media Project.
Men are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, former vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.